Welcome to Dads with Daughters. In this show, we spotlight dads, resources, and more to help you be the best dad you can be.
Welcome back to the Dads with Daughters podcast, where we bring you guests to be active participants in your daughters' lives, raising them to be strong, independent women. Really excited to have you back again this week. Every week, I love being able to sit down with you, to work with you, to be able to talk to you about this journey that you and I are both on. I've told you before, I've got two daughters myself. I've been where you are at, and I know that every day is a little bit different, and every day is a journey. The biggest thing here, and I say this over and over again to you, is that you don't have to do this alone. It is so important to know that there is a community of fathers out there that you can reach out to, that you can talk to. You don't have to go alone and think that you have to father alone, because that's really lonely. And that is really something that a lot of times as society, we've kind of feel like we have to man up. We have to figure it out for ourselves, and you don't. So that's why it's so important that every week we sit down, we talk, we learn together from other fathers, from other people with many different resources that they're sharing to be able to help you on this journey that you're on. Every week, I also love being able to bring you different guests, different people that have had different experiences, that are fathers, that have resources, that are here to help you to be that dad that you want to be. And today we got another great guest. David Sampson is with us today. And David is a father. He lives down in North Carolina, works for an organization called Time Out Youth. And we're going to talk more about that today. David has worked to raise over $30 million in funds to support nonprofits, but he works with youth to help youth in many different ways. And the things that he's doing, especially in the intersection of working with LGBTQ youth, I think is really important, because all of us are working with different kids. Our kids are maybe in that same community, and we have to be able to support our kids no matter what. So it is important to understand and to know, you know, what David has learned along the way in working with youth, but also learn about his own experience in being a father as well. So I'm really excited to have him here. David, thanks so much for being here today.
Hey, thanks so much. It's so great to be here and to be able to share some perspective with you and the great folks who are listening and who you're supporting. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you being on. And first and foremost, we got to talk about you being a dad, because you are a father of a son. I want to turn the clock back in time. I want to go back to that first moment that you found out you were going to be a father. What was going through your head?
I have a 5-year-old son. Gosh, when I found out I was going to be a dad, it was at the end of a very long journey. Jasper was born via surrogacy, so the planning for him to come really was decades worth of work, honestly. It was, you know, saving money and planning and trying to understand what it meant to be a gay dad in this world. We had just won marriage equality, so we were sort of in the midst of a transition as a country, but I always knew from the day that really I became an adult that I wanted to be a parent. So to have that opportunity to have and raise such an amazing boy was a dream come true, quite honestly. I remember the second we got the positive pregnancy test, I was just like in tears. And I don't think I stopped crying from that point until the second I held him in my arms for the first time. It was really magical.
Now, I have to ask this question, because I think you have that glow and that magic, as you said, it's magical when you're holding your child for the first time, but it's not always roses. It's not always positives. There's ups and downs to parenting, and you have to learn along the way how to balance all of that. Talk to me about what's been the hardest part for you in being a father.
So I feel like it's different for every parent, right? Like Jasper was the easiest infant. He really was. You know, we sleep trained him, and from the time he was 12 weeks old, he was sleeping 12 hours a night. Like it was unbelievable. And then he turned 3. And when he turned 3, it was like, oh, this is what everybody is talking about. Because up until that point, I'm telling you, he was the easiest kid. even when he learned to walk and, you know, was running around, he was still pretty cautious. He didn't, you know, wasn't too reckless, didn't injure himself or do anything. But man, he really found his space when he turned three. And kind of since then until now, it's, I feel like we've gotten our punch of tough parenting. So we've learned to set boundaries. We've learned kind of what it means to push back, and we've learned a lot of his tricks along the way, but it's a different experience for everyone. But infant, easy. Toddler, tough.
So as a father, what would you say has been your biggest fear in raising a child in today's society?
I feel like I'm always going to say the wrong thing. And I think that that is a fear that every parent has. You know, I think back to my childhood, and there are a lot of things that my parents said to me that stuck. So I always try and pause a little bit before I speak. I listen to him. I try and look at him and try and figure out what he's going through in that moment and what he actually needs, as opposed to looking at him throwing a tantrum on the floor. So yeah, I feel like just really thinking about the words that come out of my mouth, really understanding the impact that everything that we say as parents have on our kids. But yeah, it's a fear I live with every day, that I'm going to traumatize them somehow and say the wrong thing.
I smile at that, because I think every father feels that way, that what we say, what we do is going to, as you said, scar them, do something that's going to impact who they become. And I think that it's possible that there are things that you can do, definitely, that could scar them or impact them, but they're pretty resilient. And they definitely forgive more than, and they forget things a lot more so than we do. So just to give you some perspective.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I've learned how to apologize more as a parent than at any point in my life. Like, I've gotten really good at saying I'm sorry to my son, because I think that's really important, right? Because you're always wondering, is this the moment that he's never going to forgive me for slightly raising my voice? And I'm like, oh, I just, you know, I curl up like a kid in the corner. I really do. I'm like, oh, I want you to be okay. I want you to feel love. And I don't want you to feel this energy that I'm giving off right now in this sort of heated moment. So yeah, thank you for that.
Now, one of the things that I just mentioned was the fact that as a parent, as a father, you do have to find that balance for yourself to be that engaged dad that you want to be. But then there's also the pull to the work that you do and the things that you do to provide for your family as well. So talk to me about balance and thus far how you have had to, or what you have had to do to balance both work and raising your son.
Yeah, because you can't do one without the other, right? As it turns out. And I've had progressive responsibilities in my role here at Time Out Youth. I started in the midst of the pandemic as the director of development, and then became the director of advancement. Now I'm the chief operating officer. So it's not like my work has gotten less, it's gotten much more. So I find myself really struggling at times to have the time to dedicate, but you have to. Luckily, I work for a wonderful nonprofit who understands that work-life balance is incredibly important. They know Jasper. They love Jasper. They see me as a person first here at Time Out Youth, and not a number in, you know, some big corporation. So I'm lucky enough to have a supportive work family who respects my home life. I start my day by getting up with him, or he'll crawl into bed with us and curl up for 20 minutes, which if that ever ends, I'm just gonna lose my mind. Because those are the best moments, but it's really nice to start my day with him. You know what I mean? I just get to start my day with my son, and it centers me immediately, you know, and then I get up and I read my work emails and my brain gets going, and then I have to stop again and I have to make breakfast for him. And then I have more moments with him in the morning. And then it's a struggle getting him ready for school and packing his backpack, and we're rushing around and getting out the door. But then more moments in the car. So I think that truly finding those steady moments throughout the day when you're together, even when you're in the midst of, you know, your busiest time at work or whatever it might be, truly just capturing and having those very few moments with him, even if they might be fleeting, are incredible opportunities to bond as parents. And I really value them.
It is really important to find those moments, as you said, the opportunities to make those specific bonds with your child. Now you have one child. Now, what do you do individually as a dad to be able to make that connection, to develop that connection with your son? Because we know that each child is unique, but that your children may have very different interests and very different ideas of what is fun than what you may think is fun. So what do you do to be able to build that unique relationship that you want to have with your son?
No, you're exactly right. He's into totally different stuff than I was when I was a kid or I am now. I was a music major in college. So I had this like grand vision that my son was going to come out and be a pianist or a vocalist or something. And that is not happening, which is sort of heartbreaking for me. My husband bought us a piano for my birthday last year. And I was like, oh, I'm going to teach Jasper how to play the piano. He's going to sit down with me like, you know, like my mom sat down with me and taught me to play the piano. He doesn't care at all. Nothing. He knows where middle C is. We've done a few lessons, but he would much rather go do like Lego robotics, which is like so far outside of the realm of anything that I was interested in or am interested in. So I feel like for a while I tried to push him into things that were in my comfort zone, but it has nothing to do with my comfort zone. It's about supporting him and the things that he wants to do and really fostering that passion and that fire and whatever it is that he wants. So he's only five, right? So we're still in the midst of like trying to figure out exactly what it is that he likes or what he's good at or what he thinks he's good at. So we still try and push him in as many different directions as we can. But when he latches onto something and when we can kind of see the wheels turning in his head, it's really exciting. And we latch onto that with him and we get excited for him. And we're already finding ourselves like pushing him towards the things that he really loves and, you know, just going all in with him as much as we can.
Well, that's so fun. And maybe there's some intersection there, because if he likes the Lego robotics, maybe you can do some stop motion type things where you bring music to the robotics that he builds and do something fun like that.
Yeah. Look inside the piano lid and see the hammer, right? Like, yeah, it's super cool. It's all connected. He'll figure it out. We'll help him.
Now, you mentioned the fact that you are a part of Time Out Youth. You talked about that as well in the organization itself. Tell me more about Time Out Youth. I know it's been around since 1991. It's serving LGBTQIA+ youth. But tell me more about the organization, what your mission is, and how you're working with youth in many different ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned it has been around since 1991, and that's right. We are the oldest in the Carolinas, and we are also the biggest in the Carolinas. In between Washington, D.C. and Northern Florida, Time Out Youth is the standard of LGBT youth centers on the East Coast. So our mission is to support LGBTQ youth by offering vital programs, fostering unconditional acceptance, and creating safe spaces for self-expression through leadership, community support, and advocacy. So we do that in a number of ways. Our bread and butter are youth 13 to 24 here in the Charlotte metro region. We have mental health services, free counseling services. We offer really vital housing support services here at Time Out Youth. And then we have social interaction space. So 5 days a week, we offer programming, whether virtually or in person here in the center. And then Fridays and Saturdays, we have drop-in space. So Friday nights are for our big kids, so 18 to 24. And then Saturdays are for our younger youth who are 13 to 18. So on any given day from the time we get here at 10 o'clock up until school's out, We're usually offering housing services, job search functions to our kids who are houseless or have been kicked out of their homes due to unacceptance. So in that time period, we're really seeing a very specific group of kids. And then in the evenings, it's anyone's guess. These are kids. So we might have 30 or 40 kids who are coming in and just want to hang out and play video games, or we might be having a trans-specific group that evening or talking to our youth who identify as asexual. Any number of things can happen at any given moment here. Along with all that, we also offer community engagement work. So we have a really fantastic community engagement manager who goes out into the community, works with educators, administrators, corporations, small businesses, you name it, and helps to educate folks on the best way to serve LGBTQ youth when they're not within safe space of our four walls. So last year, she educated 2,000 community members here in the Charlotte metro region. So it's really a full slate of services that we offer our youth as well as our community. I'm really proud of the organization and the work that we do.
Now, you work with a lot of different youth, or your organization does as well, and I'm sure you do as well. And things have changed over the years. I know many people that were very silent when I was growing up and did not come out until college or beyond because of the unacceptance in society. I'm seeing much more now in the generation that my children are in, that at least children are very accepting and are much more accepting than they would have been when I was a youth. So as you're working with these youth, what are some of the big issues that they are bringing to you? You talked about homelessness, but what are some of the other issues that are really prevalent in today's LGBTQ youth that other people may not be aware of?
Yeah, you know, you're right that things have changed, especially politically, right? What has not changed is that there is still rampant unacceptance in the form of religion, in the form of family structure that is unsupportive traditionally of our youth, and that sometimes these kids have no place to go. Those kids are always going to exist. Whether we turn the clocks forward 50 years, there's always going to be something. And especially for our trans and non-binary youth, especially here in the South, things are very different in New England or California even than they are here in North Carolina. In North Carolina, there is a really large movement to really isolate our trans and non-binary youth, because as we've seen at any point throughout this movement, people don't understand and they're just scared of what they don't understand. So we really work hard to help people understand what our youth are going through, how to support them, and who they can be as people, just to make these kids not feel so alone. These feelings of isolation, especially after 2020 and 2021, when a lot of our youth were forced to stay in unsupportive homes around the clock 24/7, there's a lot of trauma that happened in those years that we're unraveling. And as our youth reemerge and, you know, come back into the building still, there was a lot that happened there that we need to work through. And we're working hand in hand every day with those youth to try and figure it out with them.
Now, there are dads out there that may have young kids, may have kids that are struggling right now and trying to figure out who they are and try, or they know who they are, but they're scared to come to their parents with that reality of who they are themselves. Are there specific things that you would recommend to dads, to parents, that could help to create that atmosphere in the home that would allow for them, for that home to be that accepting place? And the second piece of that is, if personally, as a father, you have views that are contrary to typically accepting LGBTQ, but your child comes to you and says, I am this way, I feel this way, I am this person, how do you reconcile that? And are there resources that can help you to move and to a accepting of the person in that sense, even though you may still have those fundamental beliefs that are at opposite ends?
Yeah, it's an internal struggle. I'm not that person, but I understand that those people exist. You know what I mean? It makes total sense. My dad was an Air Force colonel. He was in the Air Force for 30 years. And I grew up around this toxic masculinity that really invaded a lot of our family life. And so as a young person coming out, I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. My mother's a pastor. I get it. No, it turns out that they were incredibly accepting and I had nothing to worry about, but that's just not the case. But there's a choice to be made. Is your kid going to come first? And I know that sounds harsh, but truly, is your kid going to come first? Do they come above these beliefs that you have developed for yourself your entire life? Are you willing to change for your child? Because your child is not going to change for you. They might pretend, you know, they might pretend until they're 18, but you're running such a risk. And how sad to run the risk of losing a child just because you, as an adult who should have the skills to change, you're just so unwilling. So yeah, there's a choice to be had, and there are great resources out there. PFLAG, which stands for Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays. There's a chapter in every major city in the United States and a lot of smaller cities in the United States. So go to pflag.org and find resources to help you as a parent navigate that with your child. It's incredibly important. You know, we started this conversation with me saying I was always scared I was going to say the wrong thing. It's really easy to say the wrong thing to someone who is so fragile in the coming out process, whether they're coming out as gay or lesbian or trans or non-binary or whatever it is. There are very specific things that you can say that are not going to help and that will just make your child feel even, you know, more isolated and even more of an outcast than they already feel like they are. So it's important to be careful and to really consider every step along the way, the impact that you're going to have on your child.
I think that's so important. And, you know, I've talked to other fathers that have youth that are at many different aspects of the spectrum in regard to whether they're gay, they're lesbian, they're asexual, they're trans, and they go through their own journey, just like their child goes through a journey of better understanding. And I think one of the things that I've heard from them many times is the challenges of pronouns and changing your brain to think in different ways. And I think one of the things you said earlier is so important, especially when you have a child that is LGBTQIA+, and they come to you and start talking, is to be honest and open with them and say, I'm going to make mistakes. And I may use the wrong pronoun. I may say something that's going to upset you. And we need to be able to talk and communicate and be willing to have this type of conversation so that I can learn, just as you're learning, about who you are.
Yeah, it takes an extra layer of patience sometimes. And I totally get it. Like, you know, a teenager is still a teenager, right? So if you tell a teenager, like, be patient with me, they're not going to be patient with you. They're a teenager. But I get it. It's this extra layer. And the pronouns conversation, it's the easiest one to have. You're going to make mistakes. Absolutely. It's okay. You say sorry, you correct yourself, you move on. That's it. You know what I mean? You don't make a big deal. Those struggles that people have with pronouns are not about the person that is asking you to use the correct pronouns. It's about themselves. I'm named after my dad. I understand that if I changed my name to him, that would have seemed like some sort of slap in the face because he gave me his name. That happens all the time. But again, that's not about him. Like, it's a choice that you as a parent have to make to respect your child and to believe your child and just listen to your child. And I hope that the majority of people out there do that and understand that truly.
Now, for dads that are out there that may not have a child that is a part of the LGBTQIA+ community, but they want to support the community and they want to support other youth, other friends of their children. What's the best way for them to advocate or to support the community from a external perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. So find your local youth serving organization, LGBTQ youth serving organization. They're smaller in a lot of places, but they're incredibly vital resources. You can go to our website, which is timeoutyouth.org, and we have a resource section where you can go find local PFLAG chapters. You can go read Trevor Project studies. And Trevor Project also has an incredible amount of resources, including crisis resources throughout the United States. But really, go support those organizations and show up where you can. Show up at your local prides, show up in support of your youth at schools and out in the community, and just be there as a supportive face and as a smiling face. Showing up is half the battle, right? So really just being there is enough sometimes.
Well, and the other thing that I think that I'd throw out there is, as you get involved, and if you bring your families and have them be involved, you can start having conversations and start to allow your children to better understand the people that are around them and that there are differences and that's okay, and that it normalizes things as well.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's the Know Your Neighbor campaign. You can put a face and a name to all of these different labels that society has put on us. So yeah, having those conversations is an incredible first step.
Now, David, we always finish our interviews with what I like to call our Fatherhood Five, where I ask you five more questions to delve deeper into you as a dad. Are you ready?
Oh boy, I'm ready.
In one word, what is fatherhood?
Floating.
When was a time when you finally felt like you succeeded at being a father?
The first day that Jasper went to big kids school, he gave me a hug, he turned around, and he walked in that front door confidently.
Now, if I was to talk to your son, how would he describe you as a dad?
I hope that he would describe me as the caretaker. My husband is the fun dad. He plays with him, not more, but better than I ever could. I think I'm the caregiver. I don't know. That's a tough one. I cook and I drive him to school and, you know, I clean. I feel like that's my zone. You know what I mean? So I don't know. Ask me in 10 years.
Now, who inspires you to be a better dad?
My dad, hands down. He was incredible.
Now, you have given a number of pieces of advice, resources that dads can take and can use for themselves. As we finish up today, what's one piece of advice that you'd want to give to every dad?
Be patient with yourself. We've talked a lot about mistakes in this conversation. Know that you're going to make mistakes and learn to forgive yourself. And know the importance of apologizing to your kid.
Well, David, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for being here today, for sharing your story, and for telling us more about Time Out Youth. I really appreciate the work that you and your organization is doing, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for having me on.
If you've enjoyed today's episode of the Dads with Daughters podcast, we invite you to check out the Fatherhood Insider. The Fatherhood Insider is the essential resource for any dad that wants to be the best dad that he can be. We know that no child comes with an instruction manual, and most dads are figuring it out as they go along. And the Fatherhood Insider is full of resources and information that will up your game on fatherhood. Through our extensive course library, interactive forum, step-by-step roadmaps, and more, you will engage and learn with experts, but more importantly, dads like you. So check it out at fatheringtogether.org. If you are a father of a daughter and have not yet joined the Dads with Daughters Facebook community, there's a link in the notes today. Dads with Daughters is a program of Fathering Together. We look forward to having you back for another great guest next week, all geared to helping you raise strong, empowered daughters and be the best dad that you can be.
We're all in the same boat. And it's full of tiny screaming passengers. We spend the time, we give the lessons, we make the meals, we buy them presents. Bring your A game, 'cause those kids are growing fast. The time goes by just like a dynamite blast. Calling astronauts and firemen, carpenters and muscle men, get out and be the world to them. Be the best dad you can be. Be the best dad you can be.